Okay, Parshas Chukas. We'll be speaking about the hitting of the rock, and we'll be basing our ideas on the ideas of the Ohev Yisrael. This book actually is a couple hundred years old and belonged to Naftali Yitzchak Wien, my son's great-grandfather, and it's been reprinted, but we happen to have this original copy that's been in the family for a long time. This Ohev Yisrael was the Apter Rav. The Apter Rav was one of the greats in the earliest days of Hasidus in Poland. The Apter Rav was in the late 1700s. I think a Talmud of the Magid, one of the earliest. And in his day, he was the biggest. These ideas have been reprinted. They're famous. They're classical, what he says about the Maimariva, and they're fundamental. They explain the basic workings of the psyche of every person. We're going to focus again on terms like Chomer and Tzura. We're going to work with terms like Ayin and Yesh. Yesh and Ayin. Some Yesh is to have something. Ayin is nothing. Ayin, if you just change around the order of the letters, is Ani. When a person makes themselves into an Ayin, right, then there's potential for a new Yesh, a new something. This world is a creation of what we call Yesh Me Ayin, something from nothing. And Tshuva, my grandfather points out, is Ayin Me Yesh, when you're able to make something that occurred, an incident, an event, into nothing, as if it doesn't exist. In other words, all of real life around us, is it real? At any moment, can it cease existing and be not real? Can any aspect of matter take another form? In the end, we're all atoms, and atoms can take a zillion forms, right? Everything is just atoms. This world is called Olam. My grandfather points out that one of the explanations of Olam is Ne'elam. Everything is hidden. Here is a tape recorder or a book or a table, but it's just atoms, the same atoms that make up metal and wool and any other form of matter in the world. So what is Yesh and what is Ayin anyway? The fact that something has a particular form for a particular amount of time, matter is neither created nor destroyed once Hashem created it, right? It only changes form. So it might hold a form for a certain time and then be disposed to take another form if other influences reduce it and rebuild it, right? So Ayin and Yesh, the interchangeable line between them. And what was Moshe really expecting from Klal Yisrael, and why was Moshe therefore frustrated with Klal Yisrael? And what about the hitting of the rock as opposed to speaking to the rock? Really, from our mindset, is one nes so much greater than the other nes? Don't forget, the mate had Hashem's name engraved on it, so we hit the rock. It was a good enough nes for 40 years ago in the desert when they first came out of Mitzrayim. That was a big nes. And now it had to be speaking. So what we're going to do first is look at the wording in the psukim, and we're going to point out the words that the Apter Rav, the Ohev Yisrael, latches onto to develop his ideas. Here they come to Midbar Tzin. It's the first month of the 40th year. We haven't heard a peep for 38 years. The last thing we heard about was Korach, prior to that the Meraglim, and before that Miriam, and before that the complaint against the Mun, and then the complaint against the fact that they just wanted more Tava, a lot of that. And here comes the children. These are the people that survived the era of the desert. This is the new generation. These are the people destined to imminently enter Eretz Yisrael. They're here in the plains of Moab now. They're ready to move in. And Miriam dies, and the Be'er that's in the Zechus of Miriam dries up, just like the Anan HaKavod in the Zechus of Aaron will depart. Both will be restored in the Zechus of Moshe, and when Moshe dies, it's all gone, because Moshe also was the cause of the Mun in his Zechus. So the Be'er dries up, and they all gather on Moshe and Aaron, and they start arguing, say, we should have died like our brothers died. At least that was Lifnei Hashem. That was by divine decree. That was because of the Meraglim. Now we're just dying senselessly because the Be'er dried up, and there's no water. Also, remember here, they understood they were at a transitional point. They were leaving the Midbar to go into Eretz Yisrael. They understand that the miraculous life in the desert was coming to an end, where they lived like infants, nursing from their mothers, not having to provide their own food or shelter or, you know, take care of any of their basic life needs. This was 40 years of this, which brought them to a level, you would say, of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide for them and to see the nace behind, you know, that replaced nature, really, that replaced Teva. And here, the Nisim are going to start fading away, and they're going to have to survive in a whole different way, like a child who finds himself on their own, old enough, mature enough to be responsible, to support themselves and to build a life for themselves without it being handed to them continuously, daily, on a silver platter. And guess what? So the air dries up, but how do you, in a desert, start providing water for yourself? There isn't exactly an option. It's one thing if Hashem wants to take away the nace, but where in the Teva is the water in the middle of a desert? That's a legitimate complaint. We understand that there's no more nace, and we'll provide water, but we're not by a stream. There's nothing we can do here. So what is Hashem expecting of us? It makes no sense, right? So so they said, why did you bring us into this desert to die here, us and our cattle? And then, of course, comes this, why did you bring us out of Mitzrayim to bring us to this terrible place where there's no fruits of Eretz Yisrael and there's also no water? And Moshe and Aaron go and see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell them. In other words, Klal Yisrael are saying, we don't even see any direction for ourselves here. All we see before us is death. So there's something that we don't see that has to appear, obviously, and then it'll give us a sense of direction. So Hashem says to Moshe, take the matah, kachas ha-matah, gather. Now these are the words the Apturav focuses on. V'hakel es ha-eda, gather everybody together. This had to be in front of everybody. Ata v'aron achicha, you and Aaron, udibartem el hasela le'enehem, and speak to the rock in front of their eyes. So they all had to be there, and they all had to watch this happen. Now we know the meaning of the eyes of Klal Yisrael. We spoke about it with the Mun, right? The ability to see clearly, to see beneath the surface, to see the emes within or behind the veil, behind the mask, right? So v'hotzei, speak to the rock, v'nasan meimav, it will give its water. And here's a seemingly redundant phrase, v'hotzei solehem mayim min hasela, and you will bring out for them water from the rock, and you will give them to drink and to their animals. Which means to say, you will play a role in this. You will release the water in the rock for them, and you will give it to them, and they will drink it from your hand. In other words, somehow you can see this as Moshe. This water is it will elevate them. They'll see the nace. They'll understand many more levels of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from them and the new way Hashem expects them to act. And this is Moshe's role here. Now, Vayikach Moshe samata milafnei Hashem. Moshe goes and takes the matah from before Hashem. This is a little segue, not from the apter at all, but just to know. Which matzah, which is milifnei Hashem? Which matzah is lifnei Hashem? We just learned about it in the last parsha. The matzah that's lifnei Hashem is Aaron's matzah that blossomed to prove that everything Moshe did was according to Hashem's demand, Hashem's instructions. That matzah has been sitting in the Kodesh HaKadoshim all these years, and when he put that matzah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim way back then, Hashem specifically said to him, leave it here, and you know when you'll use it? You'll only take it out under certain circumstances. It will be officially an os libnei meri, a sign for when the people become rebellious. You'll take out the matzah, you'll show it to them, you'll remind them of what happened. They rebelled against Moshe because they didn't understand or didn't accept what Moshe was doing, and then they'll come to their senses, and the machlokas will subside. So Moshe goes and takes the matah milifnei Hashem, goes to that matah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, brings it out, and so far, and that's kashir tzivahu, that's according to the way Hashem commanded him, ad kan. Until here, he did what Hashem commanded him. Now, Vayikalu Moshe v'Aaron es hakol, and Moshe did gather everybody. Now these are the words again the Apta Rav focuses on. El Pnei HaSela, to the face of the Sela. He brings them to the face of the Sela. Vayomilim, and then he says, Shimuna Hamorim, now he's holding the stick that is for Bnei Meri, rebellious sons, right? So he has every right to hold the stick, which he just took out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and say, you are in this state. This is what the stick is here for, to remind you to come to your senses and don't pursue this destructive course. You know what happened last time the people rebelled against Hashem or against Moshe. So calm down. So he says, Shimuna Hamorim, listen, you're rebelling. You're rebelling. And then what is this? What are the next words? Some type of rhetorical question, just a throwaway. What is the point of the next words? Moshe says, "Hamin hasela hazeh notzi lachem mayim." That hey is like a question mark. From this sela, will we bring out for you water? What is the point of that question? He's asking them. Is he doubting Hashem can bring water from a rock? No, that would be ridiculous and out of context completely. And you could only say that if you never learned one word of Chumash. Obviously he didn't doubt Hashem, but he's saying, can we bring out water from the rock for you? And who is the we? Notzi, can we bring out water from the rock? Who is the we? Vayara Moshe Siyado, so he picked up his hand, Vayaches HaSela, he hit the rock, Bimatehu, with his own staff, which he was used to doing all kinds of nisim with, not the other one. And he hit it twice. Vayetsu mayim rabim. A lot of water did come out, and all the people and their animals drank. And notice how the people and their animals are not divided by esa eda ve espiram, just lumped together, people and animals. It's kind of an insult. Okay? So, the secret here is, that Moshe was in charge of bringing water out of the rock. Well, where is the water in the rock? Do rocks in the desert just have flowing streams inside of them? What does that mean? What is the real, deeper understanding of this nes? So you learned about Atbash, right? We've talked about it. Aleph Beis is how you present something in coherent order from beginning to end. It's the Derech HaTeva. That's a natural way of the world that things play themselves out step by step. Atbash going backwards, tough shin working backwards and lining up, you know, Aleph is tough and Beis is shin, and writing in the backwards form is really telling you from the final end perspective what everything we were working towards has become, what it has accomplished, what is the result of our efforts. Go backwards and you'll see what it turns into. It's the perspective from the end of history, from the point of accomplishment. So we talked about how nefesh is tov. We've talked about many forms of atbash. Well, there's another coded way of deciphering, of writing words and breaking apart words and putting words into code. There is a form where you take each letter of the word, let's use the word sela, take a paper and do this, and you write out the actual sound of each letter. So samach would be samach, mem, chaf. Lamed would be lamed, mem, dalet. And ayin is ayin, yud, nun. Well, guess what's in the middle of sela? Mayim. Mem, Mem, and Yud are the middle letters of when you write out Samach, Lamed, Ayin. In the middle you get Mem, Mem, and Yud. Mayim. Now, what does this mean? That means that there's Mayim in every Sela. What does this mean? Okay. So what it means is, these are the secrets. These are the secrets of the Torah that these great thinkers are giving to us, handing to us, great philosophers, and they speak to the fundamental, you know, workings of the human being and the world in general. Okay. So in every sela there is mayim, not just this sela. What does that mean? Well, number one, the Apta Rav goes into the idea that all things in nature, all things in nature, all of the four basic, let's start this way, the four basic natural forces, which for a very long time it was very popular to speak about the four basic forces of nature: earth, wind, or wind, fire, and water. There, it goes back to Aristotle. But the forces of nature we know are sometimes ferocious. Fire can burn up the whole world if it goes unchecked. Wind can blow down buildings and move water and in the end put out fire, right? The earth could swallow up everything. Sand, you go into the deserts of what was ancient Babylon, it's all swallowed up. It's all buried under the moving sand and the earth, right? Every force of nature gone unchecked is ultimately powerful to destroy every other force. What about water? What about water? Water can flood the whole world. Every force of nature, without boundaries, without limits, has the potential to completely overwhelm and destroy everything else around it. So how is everything in balance? How is everything in balance? Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't just make the oceans, he made the seashore and the sand, and Chazal talk a lot about this in Tehillim, how the seashore stops the ocean from flooding the whole world, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a sun that can burn us up in a second, but he also made an ozone layer and other protective measures that keep the heat away from us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made wind, but the wind in the end is also in balance. Everything somehow is maintained in a balance. Although each force independently can utterly destroy everything else around it. It's the balance of all things that is the force of life, the cause of life, the power of life, the balance of all things. By the way, the Chazal talk about this idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we say the balance of all things, we talk about the idea of these forces of nature submitting to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to hold their boundaries, not to overwhelm everything else. That's described as their submission to the dibur or the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So all things, there are forces in the world that in and of themselves are incredibly powerful. Now, not just in nature, in the human being. The human being too has forces, has drives that left unchecked can overrule and overwhelm every other drive in a person. So, for example, in the emotional arena, love can trample on everything, on all seichel, on all, it causes a person to break every law, to put themselves in danger, to put their life in danger when normally the survival instinct is the strongest instinct. Love can overpower that. So can hatred. So can lust. All kinds of things, can each thing left unchecked. So really what we're looking for is a balance. Everything must exist in balance. So the way the Apturav says it is, everything in creation, and even the person, finds within them forces and their counter forces. When a person, he says, regarding a person's very life awareness, a person feels alive and feels the kochos of their life flowing through them. And then they realize that there are forces in themselves and outside of themselves that are equally powerful that can utterly destroy them. And they say, wait, so what's the point? How does it work? And they realize, just like everything Hashem created and all my power and all my forces is lechvodo, to bring cover to Hashem, so too it must be that all the forces that can utterly destroy me so that I don't even exist as a memory, outside forces and inside forces, also are created l'kavod Hashem. So I can't destroy them, and they can't ultimately destroy me, because there's a balance. Now in nature it's imposed, in a human being it's created by our seichel and our choice. And then a person makes shalom between the forces that they are and the forces that are against them, and they can try to exist. Now he says it like this, goes on to explain. Everybody feels yesh, I exist, there's a yesh. But then a person also feels that at any moment they can be ayin, they can be nothing. their life force can be snuffed out of them by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, or by some outside force can end a person's life instantly, or everything they are, and you see this, everything they've built in life and all their potential, something can come at a person, some great drive for good or for bad to totally negate everything that they've, you know, worked on, everything they've built up, trample on all of it, make them go in a new direction. So then a person could be ayin, could be nothing. In one, the ani of a person could be ayin, you know, can be turned around to ayin. Everything has within it the yesh and the ayin, the force and the counterforce. The objective for a human being is to keep it in balance and recognize that that's the way the whole world is set up. There is fire and water. There is light and dark. There is ahava and yira. There's all the aspects of this world come in those double. That's why the world starts with the bays. Everything and its opposing force, its balancing force. Yetzahara, yetzahara tov. I created the Torah, I created the Yetzahara. Created the Yetzahara, I created the Yetzahara tov. Right? Everything has a force and its counterforce. And the balance of it is the objective. Now, let's go back to the rock with the water inside. What is the rock and what is the water? So he says the water is yavesh. The rock is dry and the water is wet. Two opposite forces. But let's take it further. Is a rock chomer, raw material? Of course it's chomer. How do you know it's chomer, it's raw material? Because you can take that rock and let's say it's a slab of marble, and what could you do with it? Well, if you're Michelangelo, you could do a lot of things with it. Right? And you could create tzura out of that rock, correct? Now, is that the tzura? When once you take something like a rock, which is definitely chomer, and you create a tzura, a form out of it, is that form the only form that that piece of marble will ever take for its entire existence? No, it could be worked on over and over and over again, and reworked and come to resemble totally different things. Okay? By the way, talking about this, just a caveat, has nothing to do with anything. Okay? You know the horns on Michelangelo's Moses? Originally, that statue was supposed to sit in the center of, I think, at the time, it was maybe before the St. Peter's, but one of their major cathedrals, and the sun was supposed to shine down, and those tiny little protrusions were actually supposed to reflect the sun. It was supposed to look like horns of light. He was not an Am Haaretz. But then they took him, and he knew the Midrashim, but they took that statue, and they ended up putting up in a niche in a different place, and the light doesn't shine on it, and therefore you just see the protrusions, and that's how the whole thing came, that it looks like there are horns. But that wasn't what he designed it for. And in any case, but things can take different forms. You know that chomer, raw material, as we said, is neither created nor destroyed, just changes forms. Now, what about water? Is water chomer?
No.
Water is the ultimate chomer. It has no form. It can take the shape of any container that it's put in. It is the ultimate. It is the quintessential chomer. It is completely malleable, in other words, or changeable. Its essence is change. And a rock, although it's chomer, it's worked upon with a lot of effort imposed upon it by a very skilled person, it is chomer, but it won't change that much. Okay. So now, the rock and the water, this is a mashal for Klal Yisrael, where they're at and what Hashem expects them to be. That's what's happening here. It's all a mashal. Everything done is to teach Klal Yisrael something for their future growth. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, go speak to the rock and it will give its water. But now, who's the rock? Klal Yisrael are the rock. And hidden inside Klal Yisrael as an Ada, as a whole nation, is the water. Chomer, ultimate Chomer, total potential to go in all new directions. All potential, also water. It's not just that it takes no form and no shape. Water is the life force. You put it on dirt, another major one of the four forces, and what happens? It springs into life. You put it on fire, It actually puts out the fire. By the way, in Jewish philosophy, Mayim is associated with Chesed, fire is associated with Din, and Chesed can put out the Din. The water can put out the fire, which would then stop the destruction and allow for new beginnings for people. If Chesed can put out the Din, it's a concept of tshuva, of beginning again. So water is all Chomer. It's all potential. It's all potential for life, for new direction, for new form. And Klal Yisrael, the rock, and inside the rock, already in there, in every single person, is the Mayim, the potential. Now, Moshe is supposed to just speak to the rock, and through the power of his inspiration, the water will flow. But Moshe sees in Klal Yisrael that they're not ready to release they don't even have access to the water that's inside them. How do we know this? Now we get to the next point. How is it that something in matter can change form and take a new form? So if you're working with something in metal, let's say, that already has one form, what do you do to start over from the beginning? You melt it down. You melt it down. You reduce it. And then you start from the beginning. Okay? So using this as an example, the philosophical concept is any yesh has to be reduced to ayin, to nothing, to be start again, to be built as a new yesh. Okay, so that's tshuva, as we said. Tshuva is there's a yesh, there's a reality on the ground of a person's behavior, a person's lifestyle. By regretting it, by abandoning it, by starting over, we take the yesh, we make it ayin. It's the opposite of bria, and from the ayin we build a new yesh. Right? Yesh me'ayin, that's the bria. And we recreate ourselves, brand new. Yesh me'ayin. But we have the potential as human beings to reduce ourselves to ayin. Now what does ayin mean? Ayin means total submission to the emes. There's no more ani, what I wanted to do and how I want to act and my impulse and my desire for gratification or to express myself in this way or whatever it is. All that ani is reduced. Completely, submits to a greater MS. That's called becoming ayin, becoming like a conduit, becoming open to hear the words of Hashem, being kind of like raw material to be shaped in a new way based on what a person learns, how a person now is newly inspired, better influences in the person's life. The person reduces themselves to ayin, to potential, and then builds off the potential, keeping their agendas on the side. In order to reduce oneself to ayin, a person obviously has to be an anav, humble, has to be utterly humble, and not put their own agendas first, which is the natural behavior of all human beings. So what is this coming after? We just went through 40 years. All the last incidents that were reported in the Torah were all cases of people putting their agendas first. Korach and the Meraglim and the people that didn't like the Mon and all of that. Their agendas first. Not in Ayin. And who's their leader? Moshe, who's totally Ayin. Totally Anav Mikol Adam. And this Anav Mikol Adam now, so be careful how you read it, is going to get angry and lose his temper. Be careful how you read that. It's not just a fit of anger. He lost his temper because he couldn't take it anymore. We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, who the Torah Hashem asserts, in the Torah Hashem asserts, he's Anav Mikol Adam. He has no temper. He has no ego at all. Zero. He doesn't have an ego. He's completely has completely submitted his total sense of self to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he's upset at Klal Yisrael here, and that's why he hits the rock. Why is he upset at Klal Yisrael? He says, first of all, you're being rebellious like them. And the essence of their rebellion is the ani. The essence of the last rebellion that caused that stick to bloom that I'm now holding, I don't know if it was still in bloom, but the stick that Moshe's holding is the assertion of the ani, and there's no way to change and release the water and become the new people, the people that are going to go into Eretz Yisrael, the people that are going to be expected to live in a whole new way without the nisim, to rise up to that level. There's no way unless you eliminate the ani, the outer form, the tzura that you have now, back to ayin, back to the potential to be remade, That's what we mean by releasing the water inside the rock. The rock is in, it's not malleable. It's stuck in its ways. It's not changeable. Without a lot of influence, a lot of exertion of effort on that rock, it's not going to change. He sees in Klal Yisrael, they're like the rock. 40 years have passed, and it's the same thing. He doesn't feel they're on the Madrega yet to reduce themselves totally and put themselves at the service of Hashem and find within them, you know, the potential to start new. This is the generation of those that will go into Eretz Yisrael. They can't be the same as that previous generation that died in the Midbar. So here Moshe goes and he brings the whole Eda. That's why the entire Eda, he believes that the entire Eda has to reduce themselves to a state of Ayin in order to create a new Yesh, to be, in order for the water to kind of be released. And he will just speak to them and they will hear him and they will achieve this Madrega and they'll, you know, and they'll be able to start growing from there. But he sees that that's not the case. How does he see that? So it says, "Vayikalu Moshe v'Aaron es hakol," and here's where the Apter Rav picks on these words, "El pnei hasela." He could only bring them to the face of the rock, the outer face of the rock. He couldn't get them to the water inside the rock. They were too stubborn at the time, too stuck in their pattern. Not yet willing to be like Moshe, utterly reduced to hear the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does Moshe have to do to release that water that does exist within them, their potential? Zapter Rav says he hits it twice, the first letters and the last letters, and he releases the Mayim, and a lot of Mayim, a lot of potential for the people. But they couldn't do it by just hearing the words. Hearing the words wasn't, the Klal Yisrael weren't on the Madrega to change themselves just by the inspiration of Moshe. So what Moshe had to do, in a sense, it's describing, yet a forcefully release the potential. Now, whenever you release somebody's potential by force, it's generally not that comfortable. It works. Sometimes it works, right? Sometimes you have to force the potential inside a person with a quick, you know, with a maka, with a a physical or emotional, you know, real smack to the person that hurts, that breaks down the person, breaks them down and releases their potential, breaks them open. So they're at a madrigo where Moshe feels he has to break them in a certain sense by going in a way, you know, with a certain, more you want to say, violent or, you know, a stronger physical expression of the, that will release the potential in the people. However, Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch, he goes on to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says no. That really, and this is which we're not going to focus on this part, he says, really the people themselves I didn't expect the people themselves to all reach this Madrega that you're on. Really, I wanted you and Aaron to be on this Madrega of total bitul, total self-negation, which would release the water, and they're seeing that it was you and Aaron that caused this change to take place in the rock. Just by you would be like a parallel to the rock. You would be utterly reduced, in a sense, to pure potential, whatever the will of Hashem is. So too would the chomer of the rock release the water, and that would have been enough of a message to Klal Yisrael. I didn't expect all of Klal Yisrael to be able to achieve this. Where Moshe seemed to be, according to this, expecting all of Klal Yisrael to be on this Madrega, and was frustrated when after all these years, they still weren't. So it was there was a sense of expectation from Klal Yisrael that maybe was too much because of Moshe, who Moshe was, and the Madrega he lived on, that was too much, and he would not lead them into Eretz Yisrael, where they would be expected to live on a whole different way. And Moshe, as we said, was already in a perspective that was much more demanding, and Aaron. But in any case, the main message here is that that every yesh, every person, every yesh of every person has within them the potential to be ayin. That is not just the potential, it's necessary. Why is it necessary for every yesh now and then in their life to be reduced to potential again and start from the beginning, to create a new yesh, to release the mayim inside the cell? Because everybody gets calcified, you might say, into a rock-like, you know, type of lifestyle where they just take the lifestyle they've been living and the, you know, what they've chosen, what works for them, and that becomes the rock that they are imprisoned in. Right? And despite the fact that they might be imprisoned in the rock, the nature of a human being is chomer, ultimate chomer is mayim, and it exists within a person. You do see people who are constantly changing even into old age. It's very rare. The hallmark of youth, of vitality, is ability to change. Not to be calcified, as you might say, into like a rock, right? Now the Rambam brings down on Mishlei, he's astonished by the wisdom of Shlomo, and he says the fundamental principle that regarding Chomer and Surah, I think we mentioned once before. Mishlei, if you go through Mishlei, you'll see there's a whole bunch of statements about the good woman and about the bad woman, and it's Mishalim, it's all Mishlei, it's Mashal. So you might see things like, I haven't found anything worse than, more bitter than death than the woman. Or you might find Matzah Isha Matzah Tova. You found a woman, you found good. Well, in Mishlei it says that the bad woman is compared to a harlot who, although she is married to a man, she continuously attempts to seduce other men in all kinds of ways until they obtain from her what her husband would obtain. This is the bad woman. So Rambam says, how wise is Shlomo? Shlomo is speaking about chomer, raw potential in a person, okay, which takes into account not just your brains and your emotional energy and your creativity, but it takes into account, you know, your psychic, you know, intuition and all of that. It takes into account all the driving forces of a person's life. It's part of a person's chomer. And he says, how wise is Shlomo? He understands that chomer, even if it has a tzura, which is called married to a man, right? We've spoken about Ish and Isha in the series of four classes where Ish is described as tzura, has nothing to do with male personality. Isha is described as chomer. Everybody has in them zochar and nekeva, Isha and Isha, chomer and tzura, zochar and nekeva, baram, v'yikras shemam adam, everybody is part and part. But it says chomer, even if it has a particular tzura, and let's say the tzura is a rock, or let's say it's something else, it's always seeking a new tzura. It will use all its ingenuity to redefine itself in a new form. So this is the bad woman, the chomer, that although it has a husband, she has a husband, she's always seeking to seduce somebody else. Right? Which means to say to be attached to and remade in another tzura. So he says, chomer, all this life force, all these forces in a person are always, endlessly, for the entirety of a person's life, disposed to take on a new form. That is why a person, many people, the greater the person, you might say the greater the Yetzirah, is often feel themselves dissatisfied with whatever they've accomplished or whatever form they have now, and are yearning, desiring to turn a new corner and take on a new challenge and develop another part of themselves. That's the mayim, the endless potential inside the rock that is bursting to come out, that can take a person into new directions. So that it's not a bad thing if a person feels dissatisfied with what they've done with themselves till now. It's built in to Chomer that it is always disposed to be reduced to Ayin and recreate itself in a new form of Yesh. That is its nature. It's always seeking to do this. It's the driving force of life. It's the source of creativity and ambition in people, and the proper positive dissatisfaction. However, at the same time, you find situations where it's the opposite. People take on Eitzura, and that's where they stop, and that's where they end. Now, here we're talking about not individuals, but Klal Yisrael as a whole also is expected to have a Tzura. The whole nation of Klal Yisrael is expected to have a form that defines and is unique to Klal Yisrael. And sometimes the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and here Moshe feels, people have to be forced, have to be pushed into that direction to take on that Tzura. And sometimes the push comes through makas, through difficulties, through a smack that hurts, through challenges, real challenges that drive a person to places they would not necessarily have been before, because just being inspired and being expected to follow the pull of the inspired words of their leader and to allow that inspiration to drive them isn't enough. So it's always like a balance between the speaking and the demanding force of breaking people and breaking sometimes a nation so that the potential inside is released. So here, basically, I just want to end with one other idea. What we're really saying here is that the highest madrega, of course, is that just the seichel of a person, just the desire of a person to be submit completely to the will of Hashem should be enough to release all their potential. So who was on that madrega? Moshe Rabbeinu was on that madrega, where his seichel and his ratzon was enough to compel everything else to move. And ultimately, that's really the growth process of a person and of Klal Yisrael, to go from where it has to be forced, like a child hit or punished, to a point where it becomes the natural yearning of a person to move like this. Now, before we end, though, I just want to go into a new direction, just another... Well, according to this, Moshe was in the Midbar, the Madrega of the Midbar was everything al pi neis, and the Madrega of Eretz Yisrael, of course, would be Teva, natural, and Moshe expected them to be at a Madrega that they weren't yet at, and that he was at, and that he wouldn't be the fitting figure. But I want to address this question from a whole other angle. We spoke about this a couple of years ago. It's a beautiful vart for your Shabbos table. It's from my grandfather. It's not as complicated and subtle as what we just spoke about. And it works with the psukim in the Chumash. Okay? And it helps you understand Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think that only a person who devoted their whole life to a kahal, to a congregation, could read into this story what my grandfather read into it. And the main point is that he goes and he says, I am not going to speak to the rock, right? I'm going, and he decides to hit the rock, right? Remember that? To make a long story short, if you have my grandfather's sefer, you can read it inside. He pit the Mayan Beis HaShoeva, the Chumash Sefer. The operative words, it says, V'dibartem el Hashem, says to him, speak to the rock before their eyes. Now, look at this. V'nasan meimab. And it's going to give its water. And then there's this other little phrase. V'hotseisa lehem mayim min hasela. And you will bring out water for them from the rock. Well, if it's going to give its water, why do you have to bring out water? Where's Moshe getting involved here? And then it says, V'hishkisa es ha'eda, and you will cause them to drink. Right, Jenny, you remember this? So, it's quick. So, just a repetition for those that haven't heard it yet. And you will cause them to drink. Moshe takes the matah, lefnei Hashem. And that's as much as he did according to Hashem's command. He gathers them together. He says, listen, you rebellious ones. Do you think I'm going to bring out water from the rock? Oh, by the way, according to the Apturav, Hanotzi lechem mayim, Moshe said, are we all? He was talking to Klal Yisrael, we're all going to bring out the water. And when he saw that they couldn't, that's when he hit the rock. But here, according to my grandfather, he's asking a rhetorical question on himself. Am I going to bring out water, me and Aaron? Are we going to bring out water from this rock? No, not the way Hashem said. And he picks up his mateh, and he hits it twice. Vayetsu mayim rabim, and a lot of water came out, but it doesn't say, and Moshe caused them to drink. Doesn't say that. And Vatesta ate, and everybody and their animals drank together, where previously it says you will cause them to drink, the people, and separately the animals. And my grandfather says the following. The only other two places in Chumash where somebody's instructed to cause someone else to drink. Sota and where did Moshe cause the nation to drink? He did this before. After, by the Egel. Moshe came down, smashed the luchos, burned up the Egel, took the dust and mixed it with water and caused everyone to drink. And what happened to the people that were guilty of participating in the Egel? Same as a Sota. The bowels distended, and then Leviam went around and had to kill people. So obviously, when you drink water, what's the point of the water? When Moshe has to cause people, or the Kohen has to cause someone to drink, what's the reason? To determine whether they are worthy or not worthy. So in the case of the Egel, what happened to all the people who were caused to drink and they were found unworthy? They died. And same by the Sota. So when Hashem says it'll give its water, but that's not enough. It's not about giving them water to drink. There's something else is going to take place here. You are going to give them to drink, which Moshe immediately understands as there's going to be a selection between the tzaddikim and the rishayim again. And these people are about to go into Eretz Yisrael. They're just about to go in. And who knows what's going to happen after the selection, and who knows how many people are going to die. So then maybe there'll be a rebellion, like after Korach, there was another rebellion. Like this whole thing can spiral downwards, and they made up in the desert 100 more years. Who knows what can happen? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu yet wants Moshe to cause them to drink, and he specifically separates them, which who will be tested, and their animals, who obviously are just going to drink. And Moshe makes a decision here as their leader. He's not participating. Like Yonah, he's not playing along. He will not cause them to drink. So Moshe says, Hanotzi lechemayim, am I going to bring out water? No, the rock's going to bring out its own water. I'm not getting involved with this selection. He hits the rock, v'yetzu mayim rabim, lots of water came out and everybody drank, and Moshe didn't get involved. So what did Moshe do? Moshe saved this door so that they can all go into Eretz Yisrael. That's exactly why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, you didn't have emunah. You should have had emunah, because you know that when people die, al kiddush Hashem, to prove the will of Hashem, the emes versus the sheker, that's always called dying al kiddush Hashem. If you would have trusted me to do this and let whatever will be, despite the ramifications, it would have been a Kiddush Hashem. And by the way, the people that have actually entered Eretz Yisrael would have been on the highest Madrega. And who knows if then the history of the life in Israel would have been different. Right? Nevertheless, of course, there's pros and cons on each side. These are tough decisions for leaders to make. But Moshe made a decision at the moment. This whole generation is going in, and that's it. So Hashem says, you didn't have emunah to make a Kiddush Hashem through their deaths. So you know what the onus is going to be? They're going to go in. But you're going to take their place. And you're not going to go in. You've traded places with them. You've sacrificed yourself so they can enter Eretz Yisrael. That's what my grandfather says. You've been moser nefesh for your kahal, so they will move forward to the next step at the risk of your own future. And by the way, the raya that this is true, on Hoshana Rabbah, the final day of the Yomim Noraim, where the Gzar Din is delivered, there's a lot of davening that day, and there's a lot of piyutim, and there's a lot of slichas. And in one of the slichas, you say in Hoshana Rabbah, I don't have my grandfather's sefer in front of me here, it says, for the sake of Moshe Neman Bias, the most trustworthy one in your house, who hit the rock, and a lot of water came out, for the sake of Moshe, have Rachmanis on us. Like Moshe had Rachmanis, so you should have Rachmanis. And then later it says, and for the sake of Aaron, who hit the rock, have Rachmanis on Klai Yisrael. And in Tfilas HaGeshem, which you daven on Sukkos, for Geshem it says, in the sake of Moshe and Aaron, who hit the rock and brought forth a lot of water for Rachmanis, as the concept is because they had Rachmanis, so give us Geshem out of your Rachmanis. So this Avera, you might say, Lishma, done for the sake of Klai Yisrael, now, till this day, is how we use it to kind of defend ourselves and say Moshe and Aaron gave up everything for us, that they had so much rachmanas, so in their zechus, please have rachmanas on us. So, yeah. So everyone have a wonderful 2 weeks.